Hello and welcome in to eBible Fellowship's Sunday afternoon questions and answers time, where you can interact with us with your questions and comments related to the Bible, and we'll try to respond as well as possible by going to the Bible. If you're calling us by phone, dial 209-647-1600 and then enter access code 181610, followed by the pound key, and that'll get you into conference. Then press star 6 and 1. If you're using Skype, simply press the free conference call button, then press your dial pad button and enter access code 181610, then press the pound key. And to get in line to ask a question, press star 6 and 1. If you're using Paltalk, go to eBible Fellowship's room, and once there, you can raise your hand, and when you're called on, you can ask your question. And now, with Sunday afternoon's questions and answers, here's Chris McCann.
Okay, good afternoon once again, and welcome to our Sunday fellowship question and answer time. Each person is invited to share what's ever on your mind by raising your hand. And feel free to take the mic, and you can ask a question or make a comment if you like. Everyone is welcome to do that. Welcome. Let's go to the first caller. Welcome to Sunday question and answer.
Hi, Chris. Can you hear me?
Yes, very well.
Okay. I thank you for your study today. I thought it was really encouraging. But my question goes to a previous study that you had actually back in April. 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 5. And you were comparing it to Matthew 16, verse 19. And you were talking about the language, about the tense of the language, about having been bound or having been loosed, if I think you remember that. My question goes, I looked into that, trying to figure out those tenses, and I couldn't find anything that helped us show that that's how we should understand these tenses as being past tense. And I wanted to know if you could walk us through an example, I mean, you know, so that we could do our own word studies, how we can look at these tenses and see what you see as far as them being past tense. What resources do you use, and how do we get there?
Well, you can use the Bible itself. You know, that's why I gave the example in Matthew 16. But maybe you're pointing to the incorrect translation of Matthew 16. I see what you're saying. I don't have handy a verse where I could point to and show you that it's translated that way. It would just be the Greek tense, and so I'll take a look at this and. It's not something I can answer off the top of my head, and try to give an example where it's possibly translated correctly somewhere, and then show.
Yeah, I used Blue Letter Bible, and I couldn't find it, and I used the Biblos.com, and the Biblos.com contradicts what we're teaching, because it definitely states that it's a present tense, at least if I understand how to interpret Biblos.
Well, yeah, I would suggest looking up a Greek grammar for the particular tense that's used here. But I'll try to take a look at that and
yeah, if you could you post it on
and
Facebook
come back,
so we can check.
Yeah, yeah, post it or perhaps maybe next Sunday.
Yeah, like the resource. Like if you look over here, you'll see, you know, how to do that. That would be helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
All
thank
right.
You very
well,
much.
Thank you. That's a good question. All right. Let's go to the next person. Welcome to our question and answer time.
Hello, Chris. How are you?
Oh, doing well. Doing well. We can hear you fine. Please go ahead.
I just want to say I love you, and I want you to go to the book of Luke, Luke 16. And
Luke 16?
Yeah. The parable of the rich man and Lazarus.
Mm-hmm.
And verse 25 through 31 kind of really sum up very nicely what you just taught.
Well, let's read that. Luke 16, and I'll start reading in verse 25. But Abraham said, Son, remember that thou in thy lifetime receivest thy good things, and likewise Lazarus evil things. But now he is comforted, and thou art tormented. Beside all this, between us and you, there is a great gulf fixed, so that they which would pass from hence to you cannot, neither can they pass to us that would come from thence. And, you know, this is, I think, expressing the heart of the child of God. We would desire to. Well, first of all, someone in heaven would not have that desire, because they just want to completely do the will of God, and they would know the will of God completely, and so they wouldn't have this desire to come from heaven. But it's really referring to believers on earth, and the gulf is fixed now that will not allow those that are in Abraham's bosoms. Verse 23, when Lazarus is in his bosom, that's a plural word. And why bosoms? Because it's picturing Lazarus as a figure of the elect, and there's a great many elect. And so God takes them into his bosoms and into the triune God. And they're in safety at this time. But the rich man is typifying those that are under his wrath, and there's no hope for him, and there's no hope for those in the earth due to this great gulf fix. And I think you're right that it does point to our present time. But thank you for bringing up those verses. And let's go to the next person. Welcome to eBibles Question and Answer.
JPL Pappy asks, according to Psalm 102, verse 16, is it fair to say there is still salvation?
Psalm 102, 16 says, when Jehovah shall build up Zion, he shall appear in his glory. Well, God has built up Zion. Zion, a reference to Jerusalem, another way that God refers to Jerusalem, and the building of Jerusalem spiritually points to the building up of the elect. Each individual saved is like a living stone placed in the construction of God's Jerusalem. Well, God has built it up, and he has appeared in his glory. Now, that phrase, appearing in glory, or we find in Matthew chapter 25, where it says there in verse 31, when the Son of Man shall come in his glory, and all the holy angels or messengers with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory, and then he gathers divides the sheep and the goats. It's judgment day, and that's exactly where we're at in time. We're in the day of judgment. God is judging the world in the presence of the holy angels. It says in Revelation 14, verses 10 and 11, and see, God is judging the world right now, and the believers are still in the world, so it's taken place in the presence or along with us. And so that verse is not teaching ongoing salvation, because what it's looking towards has been fulfilled already. God has completed the construction of his spiritual temple. And that's why if you look in the Old Testament, when Solomon completed his temple, what happened? Well, the ark went in, and and the temple was covered with a smoke or a cloud, and no man could enter in. The priest had to come out of the temple. And that's the picture in Revelation 15, when the priests come out of the temple carrying the seven last plagues, the seven vials of the seven last plagues. And it says, no man is able to enter into the temple until the plagues are poured out. And that is language indicating that God has completed his spiritual temple. He saved all the elect. Now he will judge the world through the pouring out of these vials, the final judgment. And no man is able to enter in. That is, if you can't enter into the temple, there's no salvation during this period of time. But thank you for that verse. And let's go to the next person. Welcome to our Sunday afternoon question and answer.
Hi, Chris. Hi, Brother
yes,
Chris.
Yes, hello.
Hi, John. May the Lord bless all his elect right at this moment. And could you please look at John chapter 9, verse 5, how to understand this verse?
Mm-hmm. John 9, verse
5.
4 and 5. I know. I'll read both.
Okay.
I must work the works of him that sent me while it is day. The night cometh when no man can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. And do you have a question about that?
How to understand verse 5?
How to understand it?
Verse well, 5, yes.
Well, we understand it just as it says that Christ is in the world in his people. You know, we have a great multitude of people that became saved, and the Lord Jesus indwells each one of them. So he's in the world in the believers, but it doesn't mean that he's in the world saving people. It doesn't mean that at all. And the previous verse, this is why I read it, helps us to know what's going on. It says in verse 4, I must work the works of him that sent me while it is day. The night cometh when no man can work. Jesus said, are there not 12 hours in the day? And he says that over in John 11. You can read it in verse 9. Jesus answered, are there not 12 hours in the day? If any man walk in the day, he stumbleth not, because he seeth the light of this world. But if a man walk in the night, he stumbleth, because there is no light in him. So there, God is giving us an important fact that there are 12 hours in the day. Now, consider the parable of the man in his vineyard who hired laborers, and he sent them out early in the ninth, the third hour, the sixth hour, the ninth hour. And then it says in the 11th hour that he went to hire laborers, and there were men standing idle, and he hired them at the 11th hour. And then in that parable, it tells us they only worked 1 hour. So that is in keeping with this statement, are there not 12 hours in the day? The work day is 12 hours long. And then comes night, and no man works once the night comes. Well, that 11th to 12th hour is the period of the Great Tribulation. In 1 hour is thy judgment come, we read in Revelation. And that is the last hour of work. The 11th to 12th hour, that God specifically emphasizes that as a period in which these laborers could go into the vineyard, but they could only work 1 hour. And then comes the end of the 12-hour day, then comes evening or night, and no man can work. Therefore, since the Great Tribulation ended on May 21, 2011, and that ended the 1 hour, that hour that Revelation speaks of, and that completed the 12-hour workday. Since that point, we have entered into night, and all the sun, moon, and stars are darkened in the world, in the earth. It's night. Spiritual darkness is upon the earth, and no man can work. Now, you're going to find people that will still work or say they're working, but from God's point of view, the work day has ended because he accomplished his purpose spiritually by gathering all the elect. There's no further need for anyone to go forth with the gospel in order to save sinners. The end of the day has come. And it's in that context that we go into verse 5 of John 9. So God wants us first to understand that. And then we realize, well, the phrase, I am in the world and I am the light of the world, it's not referring to ongoing salvation of any kind once the Great Tribulation has ended.
All right. Thank you very much. And may God bless you and all listeners.
Well, thank you for that good question and those verses. And let's go to the next person. Welcome to our question and answer.
Since May 21st, all of us believers have been naturally waiting for Christ's return, and we've determined that we have to still wait what the Bible calls a little season. I was just wondering, Chris, in your opinion, because of all your studies and so forth, do you think this little season could possibly be as long as 5 to 10 years or maybe 20 years, or is this just something that we don't know?
First, I think God does tell us a little while in 1 Peter 1, but we need to be careful with the phrase little season, because that identifies with the Great Tribulation. Satan was loosed, it says in Revelation 20, for a little season. And that is exclusively the 23-year Great Tribulation. So the little season is over. We're not in that little season any longer. We're in Judgment Day. The little season led us right up to Judgment Day, but now we've entered into Judgment Day. And how long will Judgment Day be for the world? Well, we're finding many similarities between God's judgment on the church, it began there, and his judgment now on the world, as far as the language, as far as the nature of the judgment. And there is a possibility the duration of the judgment might be similar and last for years. Now, if we look at the flood which took place in 4990 BC and look at the first coming of Christ, we find some similar time arrangements. Like, for instance, the flood to the cross in 33 AD was 5,023 calendar years. And from Christ's birth in 7 BC to the cross was 39 or 38 years and some months, something like that. And from 13 BC, which would have been the 11,000th year of history, to 7 BC. So we have these three dates, 13 BC, 7 BC, and 33 AD. And the flood stands in relationship to those dates very similarly to the way it stands to our dates of 1988, 1994, and 2033 AD. And, I'm not going to get into it, but if you just jot down the length of years from the flood to the dates when Christ was born and went to the cross to the length of time from the flood to 1994, the beginning of the latter rain, and then to 33 AD, I think you'll find a match. So that I'm not saying that's when it will be, but we should be prepared for a longer period of time. I think God would, since he's done this in the past, would give us more information when he decides that it's the proper time for it.
So do you think it's possible it could be 23 years?
Well, no. 23 years from 2011 would be 2034 AD. And so I think that the biggest key date would be 2033, 2,000 years from 33 AD. And I, you know, I couldn't imagine God going past that date. So that means it would not be an exact 23 years.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Chris.
Okay. Thank you for your question. Let's go to the next person. Welcome to our question and answer time.
Echo 2011 asks, I've always wondered, why does God call himself the God of hosts?
Well, I believe that's a military term. Host is a phrase, if I'm remembering this right, that really identifies with the host of an army, where they have their forces, and so God is the God of hosts. He has at his command legions of angels, for one, and he can do battle with many other things if he chooses to do. And for instance, at this time, he also is using the company of the elect, the whole company of believers, as a weapon, like a battle axe, to bring his wrath upon the world. And he's doing that just by having saved all the elect. And that fact is used as a weapon to bring punishment to the world. So I think it's that. But actually, it's a good question, and I would like to double check it. But I think that's what it's referring to. Thank you for your question. And does anyone else have a question from Pal Talk?
Yes, Jersey Mike 2 asks, Brother Camping is saying that there is no place found in the Bible not to send forth the gospel. What are your thoughts?
Well, that is true. Throughout history, leading up to Judgment Day. And the problem is that there is a lack of recognition of the day we're in. And so that's the real problem. God has brought a spiritual judgment. Now, keep in mind that God did this with the churches back in 1988. Did anyone realize that God had done it at that time? No. Did family radio? No. Actually, you could have listened for many years from 1988 into the 90s. All the way up to 2001, I believe, and have found encouragement to find a reasonably faithful church, even though God had ended the church age and at the very beginning and removed his spirit. But you see, when it comes to spiritual judgment, the nature of something spiritual is it's invisible, and therefore it's very hard to discern and to recognize, and it's impossible to see unless God opens our eyes. So that shows us, since we have the example of God's judgment on the church, that even a true believer, and of course I think Mr. Camping's a true believer, even a true believer could fail to properly understand what God is doing for some period of time. And that's why we should be patient and wait on the Lord to continue to open up information and continue to instruct his people. And eventually, slowly, they will begin to see the truth. And we also should develop an e-Bible hopes to be able to do this at some point. We should develop some literature in which we can lay these things out, and it becomes easier for people to check out what's being accurately, for one thing, hear what's being said, as many people are misrepresenting what's being said, and that would be a great help. So we're hoping to work on some literature and then share this with others, and in time, God's people will understand. But thank you for that question. Let's go to next person on the phone lines. Welcome to our question and answer.
Yeah, hi, Chris. Don't you also think that the judgment on Adam and Eve was also a spiritual judgment, because in the day that they sinned, they did not physically die?
Yes. Yes, that was a spiritual judgment. The judgment on the churches was spiritual. The judgment on Christ in the Garden of Gethsemane was of a spiritual nature. You didn't see a thunderbolt come down from heaven as he was drinking of the cup. You know, when we put it all together, there's quite a lot of evidence that points to God bringing spiritual judgment. We just read a verse in the Bible study, 2 Peter 2:4. It's a very significant verse. God cast the angels down to hell that sinned, and yet he didn't do it literally. It was completely spiritual in not providing any possibility of salvation for them. So we find all this information, and we just have to, for a time, held on to a doctrine like a place called hell, and we held on to a doctrine of Christ paying for sins at the cross and these kinds of things. And I think people are holding on to, well, judgment day must be a physical destruction of the world. It must be, and it will be. We're not saying it won't at the very end of this period of time, but to just dismiss and ignore the evidence that the Bible presents of spiritual judgments in many places, and these are major, major judgments of God upon sin, that's not being very careful with the Bible. But thank you.
One last thing. I won't ask you for the answer right now, but when you get to verse 13, looking at that word gleanings, and compare it to Matthew 13, where it talks about the end of the world is a harvest. So
are you talking about Isaiah 24:13?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, Isaiah 24:13. When you get there, that word gleanings, and how the gleanings are brought in during the harvest. And Matthew 13:38-40 talks about the end of the world being a harvest. So, I'm not going to ask you to dig into it too deep now, but when you get to verse 13, I'm hoping that we can discuss that a little further.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for mentioning that. And let's go to the next person on the phones. Welcome to our Sunday afternoon time of question and answer.
Could we look at Romans chapter 1, verse 24 through 28, and compare it to Second Timothy 3, 1 through 7?
You're a little low. I heard, look at Romans 1, 24.
Through 28. And
through 28.
And we're going to look at 2 Timothy 3, 1 through 7, please.
2 Timothy 3, 1 through 7. All right. Romans 1:24 says, "Wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness through the lusts of their own hearts to dishonor their own bodies between themselves, who changed the truth of God into a lie, and worshipped and served the creature more than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. For this cause God gave them up unto vile affections, for even their women did change the natural use into that which is against nature. And likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lusts one toward another, men with men, working that which is unseemly, and receiving in themselves that recompense of their error which was meet. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient. You want to compare that with 2 Timothy 3?
Yes.
And verses 1 through 7. This know also, that in the last days perilous times shall come. For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying the power thereof, from such turn away. For this sort are they which creep into houses and lead captive silly women, laden with sins, led away with divers lust, ever learning and never able to come to the knowledge of the truth.
Yes, we have been taught that we can't determine our future based on what we see. And the question that was asked about 2 questions ago was saying, well, the duration of time, what do you think we have, how much time do we have left? Well, we don't know exactly. But God written his word here over 2,500 years ago, basically, and we are seeing all this coming to pass now, and we know that God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah for the very same fact of same-sex marriage. Well, we don't know about same-sex marriage, we know about sexuality. So we are seeing all this happening right now, disobedience to parents, all this marriage with same-sex stuff, all this same-sex rights. And what are you saying? How would we take that for what God has already warned us to be prepared for? Because when we read this, we shouldn't be like, wow, because God already warned us. So what do you think God is telling us about what we see now?
Well, I think you're right that God, who knows the end from the beginning, wrote down, this was in the first century A.D., here in Romans and in Timothy, and he wrote down very accurately what would be in evidence in the last days, right up until Judgment Day. And now in Judgment Day, we're seeing these things. And, you know, we're so accustomed to these things that we read this and we're not shocked. We just say, yeah, I see this. This is happening. And the other thing, and yet, you know, if this were 100 years ago or 150 years ago and we were reading this, we would think, my, what evil, what awful things are happening God is talking about, because the earth, even though, or the world, even though always sinful, there was a hand of restraint of God upon sin for much of the world. It would always break out into evil things and wars and things like that. And there would be homosexuality here and there in the closet. That is, people keeping it very secretive. But now to see the things we're seeing, and to the degree we're seeing them, that this is unprecedented. It has never been in the history of the world. And so we can know absolutely, yes, we are at the end of the world. But we don't know at this point exactly how long this will take for God to finally bring this spiritual judgment and then conclude it with an actual literal destruction of the world. But thank you for those passages, and I would like to thank everyone for sharing your questions and your comments. We have come to the end of our time tonight. I'm going to say goodbye. Now at this time, Michael will come back on and we'll have some more scripture reading, and he'll tell us what's going to happen next.
And thank you for joining us here on eBible Fellowship Sunday afternoon questions and answers time. You can hear this broadcast each and every Sunday around 1 o'clock Eastern. And don't forget, you can also join us for yet another live questions and answers time Friday evenings at about 9:30 p.m. Eastern. Until then, have a pleasant Sunday afternoon and may the Lord's perfect will be done.